There's big news coming out of Washington that a new consumer privacy law is on the horizon. We're also talking about Amazon's, put out to pasture of just walk out technology, StoreMagic's partnership with Acronis in the SMB space, new CX research from Content Square, Zendesk, and LivePerson, Starburst's new managed Icehouse implementation in Galaxy, an IPO filed by Rubrik, and CHIPS Act funding for TSMC. All that and more in this week's episode of the Tech Rundown. Welcome to the Gestalt IT Rundown, where each time we meet, we run down the IT news of the week with a variable degree of snarkiness. I'm your host, Stephen Foskett, organizer of Tech Field Day, and today joining me is my co-host from the Futurum Group, Lisa Martin. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thank you so much, Stephen. It is such a pleasure to be co-hosting, guest hosting the Rundown with you today. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, many of our audience may have seen you before. Now, you're somebody that I really respect because you have this unique combination of sort of, you make people feel friendly and then you ask them hard-hitting questions. and they may have seen you as well at certain events. Tell us a little bit more about where we're going to see you in the future.
Yeah, so the audience probably has seen me for many years covering the technology industry, mostly B2B, enterprise B2B, from the enterprises to the startups. I'm going to be the MC for Boomi World coming up in a few weeks in May. I'll be at Dell Technologies World as well for the 6.5, of which I'm talent. I'll be at the Zoholics event in June as well. And just love being able to have conversations with technologists, with business leaders, and really understanding how the technology is impacting the business, the customers, the end users, our lives.
Well, thanks so much for joining us here on the Rundown. I wanted to get you on the show ever since we joined the Futurum Group, so it's very cool to have you here. I should mention, in keeping with our traditions here on the Rundown, that today is National Library Outreach Day, and that's important because I'm actually recording from an actual library, one of the first and most historic libraries in the United States, the Rutland Free Library in Rutland, Vermont. So thank you, Free Library, for providing this space for me. I assume you love libraries, but there's a couple other holidays today too, right, Lisa?
There are, Stephen. It's National Pink Day. I've got a nice pink backdrop here. It's also National Hug Your Dog Day. I have two dogs. I've just hugged both of them before I came in the studio, and that's probably my favorite one.
Well, that's kind of what dogs are there for, I think. So excellent choice of days to join us here. Let's take a look at some of the top stories in the tech news this week. Amazon is facing scrutiny over its Just Walk Out technology, which was apparently canceled this week. The cancellation and details about the AI technology sparked debates regarding how it was using AI-driven computer vision to do point of sale. Analyst discussions with key executives, though, have shown that this is a lot more nuanced story than the pop culture take that says that AI failed again. What do you think of the demise of Just Walk Out?
So it's interesting. It was really kind of a revolution in retail technology that maybe we weren't quite ready for yet. But at the core of Just Walk Out technology is this really sophisticated network of cameras and sensors throughout the store that are meticulously tracking what you do, what you pick up, what you're looking at, what you're putting in back, for example. And it really is underpinned by an advanced computer vision algorithm so that deep learning, central fusion technologies are really identifying what's being taken off shelves, what are people walking out with. The Amazon account is then charged. I thought really cool from a retail technology revolution perspective. But in terms of the AI story, I think people are still quite concerned with that. Although Amazon is doubling down on their investment in AI, I know that's our own Stephen Dickens had a chance to talk to Dr. Matt Wood, who heads AI strategy for Amazon, and talked about the Just Walk Out technology, as well as another technology called Dash Carts. I wasn't familiar with that one, but apparently it's representing more innovations in that space. That it's really a transformative era where AI is really driving and redefining the consumer experience. I think that there probably is more work to be done. I think it also could dovetail into the whole data privacy and regulations topic that we're going to be covering today as well. But if we look at the journey of it, it's really where AI and ML are continuing to push the boundaries of possibility. And I think it's just maybe it was a little bit cart before the horse. Store Magic and Acronis have joined forces to elevate data protection solutions, announcing the integration of Acronis CyberProtect Cloud with Store Magic SV-SAN. This collaboration really aims to enhance data availability, protection, and recoverability for managed service providers, enabling them to meet really stringent recovery point and recovery time objectives while managing costs effectively. I know you were briefed along with Paul Nashwadi, Stephen, and Krista McComber. So what do you think of this combination, this collaboration?
Yeah, this is an interesting collaboration because it's so fit to purpose. If you follow me on the rundown or on social media, you know that I'm a big fan of solutions that are designed to solve specific problems for specific markets. And that's exactly what we've got here. Store Magic is absolutely out in front in providing basically enterprise-grade storage on a low equipment budget. They do an incredible job of that. We saw them presenting at Edgefield Day recently, for example, where they talked about the many ways that their solution can deliver basically big iron features on literally little tiny devices at the edge or with small businesses. Now, Acronis is a company that many of us in the industry are familiar with, though I have to say I have not seen them yet on Tech Field Day events, and I don't think I've ever even been briefed by Acronis specifically. But their CyberProtect Cloud is an interesting solution, again, for the same customers that Store Magic targets. So this was a really nice combination. It's a really nice go-to-market for these two companies. Essentially, it gives you a high availability storage platform and really enterprise grade from the looks of it, data protection and cyber protection, cybersecurity, in a nice package that's available, that's integrated, that is affordable for smaller companies in the market. So basically, who's not to like getting big company features for small company dollars? And that's really what Store Magic is doing here with this combination with Acronis. In the
Thank
realm
you.
of customer experience, new research from Content Square, Zendesk, and LivePerson sheds light on pivotal trends and shifts in 2024. Content Square's study highlights the dominance of AI, hyper-personalization, and immersive experiences in the digital commerce landscape. Zendesk emphasized the transformative power of AI-driven customer service, and they foresee a shift toward intelligent CX strategies. Meanwhile, LivePerson warns of an emerging AI gap between businesses and consumers, signaling challenges in adoption and education around AI technologies. This is a new topic for the rundown, but one that Futurum and yourself have focused on for a long time, Lisa. So maybe you can give us some context.
Definitely. I've always been fascinated by the customer experience. It's hugely impactful to brands of in every industry, brand reputation, net promoter score, customer retention, advocacy. These days we have this expectation that we have these devices, we can get whatever we want right now, and it's going to be personalized to me. It's going to be relevant. It's going to be real time, and it's going to be a seamless experience. And so when I learned about hyper personalization, which is really the idea of applying AI and real time data to create products and services and content to the brand experience, I was really fascinated. And of course, heading the list is AI. And what we're seeing is brands across industries really embedding Gen AI tools into digital customer experiences. Like global brand leaders and what this report Reed's report showed, where they really foresee a greater use of AI tools this year overall. AI is innovating with chatbots, for example, and that's one of the things I think requires a lot of patience on our end, on the consumer end, to help train the chatbots on data to help them really become deliver that hyper-personalized experience that we really want, with especially the speed and scale of content creation. I think we're reaching a tipping point where AI is advancing so quickly, and it's coming into the equation to really transform the consumer experience as well as the business experience. We definitely have this expectation that we're going to be able to get whatever we want, not only on Amazon if we're shopping or we're doing a transaction with a rideshare company, but in our business lives as well. That blends really beautifully, and our expectations are only getting higher and higher. And it's exciting to see what AI is going to be able to do to deliver a much more relevant, hyper-personalized customer experience, whether you're at your bank, at a healthcare organization, or at a coffee place. Another thing that was really interesting, you mentioned this, LivePerson talked about the significant divide, or the AI gap, as they're calling it, that's emerging between business leaders and consumers on the adoption, the enthusiasm, the education around AI. And so while organizations, as the report showed, are really doubling down on AI and automation, I mean, you know, we can't go to an event without hearing about AI, AI, AI. The average consumer doesn't have a ton of clarity at this point in terms of how AI can be used to make their lives easier, more convenient. So business leaders from an AI gap perspective definitely have some work to do in this area to close that gap. What's an ICE house? Build a data warehouse interface on top of OpenQuery Engine Trino and Open Table Format Iceberg, and you've got one, says Starburst CEO Justin Borgman. Lots of the biggest service providers are building exactly that. And now Starburst is making it available to all. Stephen, you just wrote an analyst brief about Starburst's Ice House and Galaxy with feature analyst Sam Holchuk. What's your take on this?
Well, I've been big on Starburst for a while because what they're doing is, well, the classic story of taking incredible open source and open development technology and bringing it to an enterprise audience in an effective and efficient way that allows them to get the same benefits that these big hyperscalers are getting. So all of the ingredients of this, this Ice House concept were developed by hyperscalers and created as open source. So essentially we've got the Trino, which is the open query engine. It was originally called Presto SQL. And the goal was to allow an open source query engine that could handle just enormous amounts of data for a company you may have heard of, a product you may have heard of, Facebook. And then what happened was Netflix, well, they wanted something that would be the backend, the table format that would allow them to use Trino in an open way with open data sets. So they developed this Iceberg. And since then, a lot of these hyperscaler companies have developed and been deploying Trino plus Iceberg data, well, lake houses is, I guess, the word that you call it. Essentially, it's a friendly place to integrate with a data lake. So it seems to the application and to the consumer as if it's just a regular organized structured data warehouse with a SQL interface. But underneath the surface is this massive, massive data set that you can then integrate into a more friendly SQL interface. So that's what we're talking about here. An Ice House, which is a not only a band from the Australian band from the 80s, as you know, I'm sure, Lisa, but a friendly way to access a Trino plus Iceberg data lake. And that's really what we're doing here. So Starburst has their Galaxy platform, which is basically a very friendly SaaS platform that allows companies to easily deploy a lot of the solutions in this market segment, and again, in a friendly way, in a supported way, in a very enterprise appropriate way. And now they're offering this Ice House format as basically part of, or Ice House architecture as part of Galaxy. So if you're in an enterprise that has this massive data lake and you need more of a friendly SQL data warehouse kind of interface for it, that's really the customer that Starburst is going for. So now you can see why I say, I mean, this is pretty cool because it takes this incredible hyperscale tech that most of us probably don't have the skills to actually deploy and use and makes it friendly and useful for the enterprise. Rubrik, a leading data backup security vendor, has initiated an IPO. That's right. This is a significant move as the first data backup vendor to go public in many years. The company aims to utilize this IPO proceeds to fuel expansion of its security cloud software and to broaden its enterprise space. The decision follows strategic pressure and competitive pressure in this market. And I can't wait to learn more about this. Lisa, what's your take?
Yeah, it's interesting that you were talking about it, this being the first data backup company to file an IPO in many years. We just saw, and you and Tom talked about recently, I think it was your Valentine's Day episode, the Cohesity Veritas merger, what's going on there. A lot going on in the data protection space, cyber resiliency space. So it's going to be interesting to see what they're going to do with the infusion of cash, how they're going to be growing and expanding the business. But it seems like the industry is kind of warming up to data protection, cyber resiliency vendors, understanding the criticality of data protection and cyber resiliency as attacks are all too common. The attack surface is spreading, the types of attacks are spreading, the sophistication is expanding. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do there. They're also expanding into Gen AI, which who isn't? They've got a Ruby, their chatbot called Ruby, and basically Rubik Security Cloud, what it's enabling them to do, it's powered by actually OpenAI. So I think they're going to get much more visibility and awareness in terms of what they're doing in the cyber resilience front, how they're helping organizations across industries really establish a cyber resiliency posture, which is absolutely table stakes these days for organizations. And they seem to be a legit cyber resilience player. Obviously, they pivoted from data protection, data backup, and DR to cyber resilience, and that was a big pivot for them, not just in messaging marketing form, but from an overall objectives perspective to enable their customers to really be resilient. Last month on the Rundown, Stephen, you discussed Intel's Hall of CHIPS Act funding. And now we're learning that TSMC will get federal manufacturing funds as well. Specifically, the US government will provide $6.6 billion to help TSMC expand manufacturing in Arizona, including cutting edge 2-nanometer process nodes.
We've been talking about the CHIPS Act quite a lot for quite a long time, and I hope that our listeners aren't getting bored with this. But I thought this story was really interesting because some of the criticism that was leveled toward the CHIPS Act was the fact that Intel was receiving just so much of this money. Now, that criticism has come from the public, but it's also come from the industry. Well, I think that the federal government has an answer here because, as you said, they're giving $6.6 billion to TSMC. TSMC, in case you're not aware, this is the Taiwan semiconductor manufacturing company. This is the global leader in advanced microprocessor technology. They manufacture basically all of the most advanced stuff for companies like NVIDIA, Apple, and even Intel. And those processes are actually out ahead of Intel in terms of the technology, the process nodes that they're using, even though Intel is rapidly trying to catch up with their foundry business. Again, as we've talked about a lot on the Rundown. So TSMC, it already has two fabs in Arizona, and now they're going to build a third one. And it seems from the press release that TSMC is going to be bringing their most advanced manufacturing capabilities here to basically have the most advanced chips be manufactured right here in the US. This is exactly the same story that we're hearing from Intel. And I think it's really important that now the US not only will have Intel's most advanced manufacturing, but TSMC's as well. These technologies are actually somewhat well-suited to Arizona, but somewhat not, because they're very energy intensive, and Arizona actually has tremendous solar energy resources or potential, but they're also very water intensive. And I don't know if you know, but the Copper State, as it's called, doesn't actually have that much water. So it's also nice to see that TSMC is promising to make their plants as eco-friendly as possible. They're talking about 90% water recycling and very, very minimal discharge. Again, this is important because these industries are incredibly water intensive, more than you might guess. And this enables them to basically build their fabs in places like Arizona that have a good supply of sunshine, a good supply of workers, reasonable weather, so you don't get a lot of cancellations. Importantly, again, I'm sorry to say this, but no earthquakes, that sort of thing. So it really does help for them to have a globally distributed manufacturing footprint. And of course, politically, it helps as well, because this means that they will be able to manufacture their stuff in the United States, which is, well, where the United States wants things to be manufactured. Lisa, now let's take a closer look at a news story that I think has not yet caught the attention of the tech industry, but I think this could be pretty, pretty big. In a historic move, key federal lawmakers, including Senate Commerce Committee Chair Maria Cantwell and House Energy and Commerce Committee Chair Kathy McMorris-Rodgers, unveiled a sweeping proposal aimed at granting consumers extensive rights to manage the use of their data by tech giants like Google, Meta, and TikTok. The proposed legislation is called the American Privacy Rights Act, and it establishes a national baseline for data collection, usage, and transfer on the internet, allowing users to opt out of certain practices like targeted advertising. The bipartisan agreement also addresses longstanding issues around federal versus state laws and outlines enforcement mechanisms through civil lawsuit for violations. But its prospects in Congress are uncertain. I think this is a really interesting story, Lisa. Did you have some thoughts on it too?
Yeah, my first thought was it's about time. And we've been behind Europe with GDPR for so long. We've seen states like California with CCPA becoming CPRA, really taking the lead to protect consumer data. We all, as consumers, there are breaches in the news daily. We know that the attack surface is expanding. It's getting more sophisticated. It's getting much more personal. Smishing is an issue. So my first thought was it's about time. I was surprised pleasantly to hear that it was bipartisan, but I think it's really about time because all we're doing day in and day out is creating data, and that's only going to increase. And the ability for the bad actors to get access to it and hack and you know, destroy brands and things is only increasing. So I think it's something that is really necessary at the federal level, and I think it's about time.
Yeah, the bipartisan angle is really cool here too. You know, basically the House and the Senate, which are, you know, respectively Republican dominated and Democrat dominated, both came together. They have each have a committee that focuses on topics like this. And the heads of each committee, a Republican and a Democrat, came together to basically address all of the different varying concerns that each of them has. So from my understanding, for example, the Republicans didn't like the idea that consumers could be suing people for violations in private lawsuits. And I think that the Democrats didn't like the fact that some businesses would be affected by this and others wouldn't. But, you know, they did the thing that I wish Washington would do more, which is they came together and they reached consensus and they compromised and they came up with a solution that's honestly pretty good. Essentially, from my understanding here, this law would be sort of like the GDPR in Europe or the CCPA in California, and it would allow consumers to control how their data is accessed. And as you said, a lot of this now, it kind of veers into this whole cyberspace, cybersecurity aspect as well, because if data is not retained, if data is deleted, if data is protected properly, and if there's enforcement mechanisms out there, hopefully some of this data won't be leaked and used by criminals. But it also impacts user privacy. It impacts the whole question of targeted ads and all that sort of thing. So the idea is that this would affect only the larger companies. I believe that it exempts companies under some revenue mark, like $40 million or something. It would allow, for example, private lawsuits. It would not allow things to just be shunted over to arbitration, which is, you know, generally seen as pretty consumer unfriendly. So overall, this sounds great. Now, another aspect of this that's important is that many states were starting to implement their own laws on consumer data privacy and data protection. And this would preempt all of those. Essentially, it would say no more state laws. We're going to have a federal law for data privacy and data protection that applies to all the states. And again, I think that that's something that's really needed because, you know, the internet is not bound by state boundaries. And the idea that consumers in California get different protection than consumers just over the border in Nevada or something, it seems pretty weird to me. So again, this all seems like it's headed in the right direction to me, but I wonder if it's really going to pass.
That's a great question. Will it pass? I think the bipartisan example that you highlighted is incredibly important and maybe foreshadowing for things to come. But I really think at the federal level, it will help organizations understand, it should help organizations understand rules much more clearly, to your point, versus businesses that work with data from California, et cetera. A lot of confusion there. Hopefully this will smooth things out, be even and get passed and really ultimately protect us like we should be protected as consumers.
Yeah, I do hope it passes. Unfortunately, it's an election year. We've got budget crises. We've got wars. We've got funding questions. We've got so much stuff going on in Washington. I want to be optimistic about a beautiful, appropriate, bipartisan bill that would actually benefit people getting through Washington. But I am a bit of a cynic, and I do wonder if it's even going to be put up for a vote. We'll see. If it is, this could be huge. Now, before we go, Lisa, I wanted to talk to you about another thing. I know that you are launching a webcast of your own next week, and it sounds pretty exciting. So tell us a little bit more about the Marketing Art and Science webcast.
Yes. You know, I've been in marketing for many, many years now, in addition to the media work and the technology correspondent work that I've been doing. And one of the things that it's always fascinated me about marketing is how much more scientific it has become over the last decade or so with the infusion of data science and analytics and different tools. And so what we wanted to do is really have a series, Marketing Art and Science, that explores with CMOs the fusion of the artistry of marketing with the data science component of marketing that is modern marketing today. We have some great guests lined up for the program, which launches next week, including the chief marketing officer of Delta Airlines, talking about a 99-year-old organization that is really becoming a technology-driven hospitality airline company. It's fascinating. We've got the chief marketing officer of Domino Data Lab talking about how they're leveraging AI and Gen AI specifically in marketing where it makes sense. We've got the CMO of Infinidat talking about what his perspectives are on where's the art in marketing. Everyone has different perspectives, and it's been really fun to be able to unpack with CMOs specifically what they think, what they're doing, and what excites them from an emerging technologies perspective that's on their horizon. So you can catch that starting next week.
Well, that's awesome. And I know some of these people personally, and I know that they'll be awesome on there. And I don't know the others. And so that really bodes well for the future of this webcast. I can't wait to hear it. I also want to mention a couple of things that are coming up in the weeks ahead. This week, actually right now, we've got Security Field Day happening. Arjaka Index Engines, Palo Alto, and Zerto are presenting. And we've got a couple of the Futurum folks out there. We've got Tom Hollingsworth on site. Very exciting. Coming up real soon, we've got Mobility Field Day in May. We just announced Arista, Celona, Cisco, Fortinet, and Juniper are presenting, and actually there could even be more. We've got an App Dev Field Day event coming up as well, and I'm very, very excited to announce that our good friends at Mesmo are gonna be presenting. They were a big hit at a previous Cloud Field Day event. After that, we've just got confirmation. We're gonna be at Cisco Live this year. I would have to mention, though, also the 6.5 Summit, which is the big annual summit from all of the 6.5. That's June 11th and 12th, which is the same week as Cloud Field Day. So you definitely want to tune in for that 1-2 punch. Well, thanks for watching this week's episode of The Rundown. You can catch new episodes every Wednesday as a YouTube video or in your favorite podcast application. We'll be back next Wednesday to talk about all of the IT news from the week that was. Until then, for myself, my friend Tom Hollingsworth, my friend Lisa Martin, and all of us here at Tech Field Day in the Futurum Group, here's wishing you and yours a very pink, dog-hugging, library-friendly day.